This is Areski Daoud of Mare Risk LLC, and this is an audio brief. Welcome to this new episode of the Nigeria Security Review, brought to you by Mare Risk LLC. In this episode, we're looking at the week ending 10 November 2019, during which there were 39 critical incidents in the country that we've recorded, that resulting in about 91 deaths that we are aware of, that we could track. A full third of the incident count came from the human and social category, followed by the criminality category at about 25-26%. The mere risk instability index for the week ending 10th of November was 1.87. That's a decrease from the previous weeks as a result of a reduction in violence in the northeast and in bandit activity in a central and northwest Nigeria. The index measures the extent of the instability on a scale of 0.5 to 5, where 0.5 means the country or the region is risk-free, and 5 means the region qualifies as a failed state. This week's index essentially places Nigeria as a moderate risk region, but really within that range, it's literally a couple points shy from reaching the high risk zone, which is in our case a red alert, whereas really in the case of the moderate risk region, it's orange. So it's really close to a high risk zone, but a reduction in violence in the northeast and then the central and northwest led the index to fall within sort of the moderate risk region. Now, so what are some of the most important highlights of the week ending 10 November? Well, let's start with the political front first. There has been clearly a growing rift between the presidential office and the office of Vice President Onsibajo. The tension between the two is likely tied to a reduction in the vice president's prerogatives, including the unconfirmed dismissal of 35 aides to the VP ordered by President Buhari, and the transfer of the humanitarian branch of the VP to the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs. The second point to keep an eye on is sort of the regional politics, where Bayelsa state authorities are warning that the floods experienced by the state could prevent voting at the end of this week on 16 November 2019 in the gubernatorial state elections. The recent floods and natural disaster throughout the state of Bayelsa have forced the displacement of scores of people in refugee camps. In Kogi, the People's Democratic Party, the PDP, claims that private security operatives were allegedly hired by the ruling All Progressive Congress, the APC, to disrupt the 16 November 2019 gubernatorial election. Now that we entered the new week, the warning really came true, with a gang of armed men reportedly burning down the building of the Social Democratic Party, the SDP, in Lokoja, and that's in Kogi State. And those attacks occurred over a two-day period, that was today and yesterday. So for those of you traveling to states that have elections this week, special precaution is obviously necessary. On the insurgency front, we note that 10 Nigerian soldiers were killed when their vehicles were ambushed by suspected Boko Haram insurgents in Demboa district in Borno State. Borno State, for those of you who don't know, it's in the northeast of the country. The attack took place specifically near the Sambisa National Park, where 9 of the troops were wounded and 12 more went missing. Also reported last week, another Islamic State of West Africa province insurgent hideout was discovered by the military, prompting the Nigerian Air Force to raid the location in early November, that is the 1st and the 2nd. No casualty figures were reported, although the military did report that insurgents were killed. The military remained pretty active in the northeast, preventing a Boko Haram attack on Damaturu in Yobe State on 7 November. Soldiers cleared the suspected area, but the army also said that it foiled a plot also by allegedly by Boko Haram to attack universities in Lagos, and more on that in a few moments. Struggling with mass banditry and criminality, the Northwest and Central states have been increasing their anti-crime campaigns, announcing dozens of arrests and more criminal suspects. The most active states in counter-crime this week were Niger State, Zamfara, and Kaduna. Another point to note is in the last crackdown on religious correctional centers accused of abuse, the police rescued 259 people from torture and appalling conditions in the Uju area of Ibadan, that's in the southwest of Nigeria, not too far from Lagos. Now, the victims were men, women, and children who had been apparently locked up for several years. Lagos and Bauchi states are confronting viral outbreaks that have claimed the lives of dozens of people. Health authorities this week reported an outbreak of gastroenteritis, which they say killed 11 people. In Bauchi, the state health authorities reported an outbreak of yellow fever, which killed 29 people. In Abuja, there have been new concerns raised by the House of Representatives that the close proximity of the Democratic Republic of Congo could bring the Ebola disease into Nigeria if stronger measures are not taken. So in a nutshell, that was sort of the general bullet point view, if you will, of the incident or the critical incident environment in Nigeria. But let's go now into some more details. We've picked about 4 or 5 points to talk about, beginning with the signs of growing rift between the presidency and the vice presidency in Nigeria. We think that there has been a clear rift between President Buhari's office and that of his vice president. Tensions between the two is generally attributed to a reduction in the vice president's role, perhaps prerogatives, with criticism against President Buhari escalating due to his travel plans. Attacks ignited against President Buhari in the media, that is, when his chief of staff traveled to London to have the president sign a bill rather than empower the vice president to act on his behalf. That triggered all sorts of reaction within sort of the social media, the general population, as to why the vice president hasn't taken more responsibility as it happened last year and 2 years ago. A presidential assistant acting as a spokesperson defended the decision by saying that the president can rule from anywhere in the world. In September 2009, Buhari, as you recall, took away the special intervention programs from the vice president's area of responsibility and gave them to the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs, Disaster Management, and Social Development. So there's been a shift in or a transfer of some power from the vice president to Ministry of Human Affairs on issues of humanitarian affairs. Then a list of 35 aides to the vice president, Osinbajo, was allegedly dismissed by President Buhari, resulting in strong but also mixed reaction to the news since the report came out on the 6th of November. Vice President spokesperson denied that there is any tension or rift between the two. Still, the speculation that senior advisors were removed from the posts has been fueling sentiments that President Buhari is increasingly forming a government that is more authoritarian than anything else. Now, the issue brings to the fore the divisions that exist between Northerners and Southerners in Nigeria, as well as highlights the Christian-Muslim divide in the country. Now, let us shift to public health. There has been a dangerous spike of yellow fever in northern Nigeria over the past weeks. This week alone, Bauchi State Health Authorities reported that there were at least 224 suspected cases of yellow fever, of whom 29 deaths were reported in total so far in four LGAs, namely Alkaleri, Bauchi, Darazo, and Ningi. Those are four counties, if you will, and all located in Bauchi State. Further north, in Katsina State, near the border with Niger Republic, a deadly disease outbreak, suspected to be also yellow fever, was reported to have been plaguing at least three sub-regions, Matazu, Danmusa, and Kankara, with a growing number of reports claiming perhaps as an exaggeration, 150 deaths, but the numbers are pretty big. The state government insists that the death toll is around 24, with 47 cases recorded, but people say the government is not taking into account the number of deaths occurring in remote areas and even within homes that have not been reporting those diseases to authorities directly, and hence the number of 150. Now, some are saying that they have witnessed 134 fatalities just in Matazu alone. And then you have 10 and then there were 10 in Danmusa and 11 in Kankara over the last 3 to 4 weeks. Now, in Lagos, health authorities in the state report an outbreak of gastroenteritis, which they say claimed so far 11 lives. At least 370 other people were affected by the disease but were treated on time and are fine. The disease is caused by microorganisms. Public health officials say that right now 400 cases have been identified so far, and attributed the outbreak to the persistent rain and floods experienced by several LGAs or counties in the state. Finally, still staying on the health front, there is certainly new concern about potential for an Ebola outbreak. It shouldn't be exaggerated, but there's still individuals and officials that are really concerned about that. On 5 November 2019, concerns were raised by the House of Representatives that the close proximity of the DR Congo can bring the Ebola disease into Nigeria if stronger measures are not taken to prevent it. I think, in my opinion, the most devastating incidents of the past few weeks has been the proliferation of flooding across the entire Nigerian territory. This year's flooding has clearly devastated large swaths of the Nigerian territory. The increase in the magnitude and ferocity of the floods due to climate change combined with Nigeria's poor infrastructure are clearly resulting in unprecedented cases of flooding in the north, central, and southern parts of the country. Massive volumes of water were released from the Lagbo Dam in Cameroon, and that's causing the Niger River to flood over 3,000 homes and destroy crops and farmlands worth millions in at least 8 communities of central Itsako LGA and Edo State. The deluge of water happened on 6 November 2019. Properties were completely or are completely submerged, and many people are now homeless. A refugee camp has been set up by local authorities to house the victims, and an appeal for aid has been made to the federal government and anybody that could help. In the northeast, Adamawa State has been experiencing some of the worst flooding in its history. Going back to the end of October, that is 28 of October, the Adamawa State Emergency Management Agency announced that 100 villages have been affected by the flooding, with 36 of those entirely submerged. And just like any other places in Nigeria, farmland and property have been completely destroyed, and many residents have been rescued and moved into refugee camps in neighboring regions. At least, as far as we know, at least 6 new camps have been created to accommodate the displaced population. In the center, Niger State Emergency Management Agency also confirmed towards the end of October that the death toll in the central central region has reached 18 as a result of the same type of problems, that is really flooding. More than or nearly 42,000 people have been forced out of their homes, and in all, there has been over 2,700 houses that have been completely destroyed throughout 20 counties or LGAs, and last report that we saw, 152 villages have been completely submerged in the area. In the south, states in the Niger Delta region have also been badly hit by flooding and erosion of land, so much so that the Akwa Ibom state government has now asked the federal government for help. In that state alone, there are over 1,000 flood and erosion cases. The governor has insisted that government intervention is necessary to provide the resources needed to prevent the crisis from worsening and to bring a permanent solution to the flooding problem. I think by that he probably means that the issues plaguing the water evacuation system may be, or is certainly partly a cause of the problem. Staying still in the south, in Delta, and after visiting six of the 11 refugee camps established in the state, a senior official of the State Flood Risk Alert and Management Committee raised also an urgent alert about the impact that floods have had on the refugee camps and anticipate more destruction ahead if urgent measures are not taken. The camps in Delta that host currently 18,000 displaced people, up from 10,000 last year, prompting authorities to call for an urgent federal involvement. The at-risk camps are located in several LGAs, including Patani, Isoko South and North, Ndokwa East and West, and Anyosha South. These camps were set up in early October, specifically to house people and families who were victims of floods. The IDP camps, sadly, are now suffering from ailments like malaria and other diseases, and any assistance is urgently needed, of course. This is a continuation from the previous week's similar environmental disasters experienced by Nigeria, with communities, industrial hubs, and roads submerged. Ogun State has recently declared a state of emergency in the area of Isheri North. There have been companies there that have been badly affected by flooding. We've heard of areas that are occupied by large companies like GlaxoSmithKline, Unilever, Nestle PLC, Biloxi Group, Procter & Gamble, Sun Steel Industries, and many others that have been experiencing floods and may have some impact on local activity. There is no drainage solution for the time being, and infrastructure, including roads, electricity, and communications, are in deplorable condition. In Ondo State, recently two children in Niajapa in Ese Odo District were found dead after they were initially declared missing. The flooding has caused economic hardship and destruction in the region, and continues to force people to abandon their properties. In Lagos, large-scale flooding has breached the Oyam Dam, which was built to control the Ogun River flow. The floods are not likely to recede anytime soon. Communities in the Ekosi Isheri and Igboyi Ketu local council developments of Lagos have been completely submerged. At least three people there have drowned, apparently from flooding. In the state of Anambra, specifically in the Orumba North LGA, there have been reports of losses of more farmland following a large-scale landslide attributed to heavy rainfall, and that's also forced the people to flee their homes as well. On the insurgency front, there has been an apparent lull, which could be attributed to a combination of factors, including an intensification of military counterinsurgency sweeps, but also most likely, really, due to the pause in activity by Islamic State or the Islamic State following the death of its leader, al-Baghdadi. It is tempting to suggest that the military campaign is bearing fruit, but the Islamic State organization remains a major wild card going forward, and I believe we will witness a resumption of attacks from insurgents in the coming weeks. There were still a few spectacular incidents with Nigerian soldiers ambushed by suspected Boko Haram fighters in Demboa district of Borno State. That's on the edge of the Sambisa forest. The incident took place on 6 November 2019 while the soldiers were returning to their base after conducting a clearance operation. In the intense clash with insurgents, 10 soldiers were killed, 9 others seriously wounded, and a dozen more were reported missing. The military said 9 insurgents lost their lives on the other side. 5 military vehicles were destroyed, and one insurgent vehicle was also destroyed. A number of weapons were recovered. Now, unreported last week, there was another ISWAP hideout discovered by the military, prompting the Nigerian Air Force to raid the location on the 1st and the 2nd of November. So that was really early in November. It was not reported, so we are talking about it right now. The raid took place along the Lake Chad in the northeastern part of Borno State. The Air Force said that many insurgents were killed and vehicles destroyed by the airstrike without providing figures. In Yobe State, west of Borno, intelligence monitoring suspicious movements of Boko Haram led the security forces to prevent an attack on Damaturu on 7 November 2019. Information is limited on this particular incident, but it was reported that 2 fighter jets were involved in clearing an area. It was reported also that no casualties were sustained from the military side. No more details were provided. However, there's an alarming event that was recorded this week, and that the Nigerian army said it foiled a plot by Boko Haram to attack universities in Lagos. Lagos is in the southwest of the country, and so that would be very unusual for Boko Haram to venture that far down. The military said it arrested 8 suspects who reportedly confessed to being Boko Haram members. The military issued a statement on the 5th of November to reassure the public and to insist that Lagos was safe. Now, of course, there have been a number of incidents that we've tracked and we haven't reported in this podcast. Looking at the incident map for the week and even prior, we see for this week that there have been, in southern Nigeria, there have been 2 major fire breakouts on Lagos Island. There have been attacks on community boats in the state of Rivers, and those attacks were attributed to armed pirates. 2 people were killed this week. Another issue that has been recurring over the past weeks is that one more Islamic center was found holding 259 people, essentially jailed hostages, as some people would say. That's in the state of in Ibadan, in the state of Oyo. Going back to even the previous week, a few things that really attracted our attention is the fact that there has been a persistent collapse of buildings. Just 2 weeks ago, 5 more buildings collapsed just in Lagos, and 1 building collapsed in Umuahia, that's in Abia State. But I wanted to close this podcast with a quick business update. As you may know, Nigeria decided to close its land border since August of this year. It's not the first time Nigeria does that, but this decision this year was motivated by the need to control the country's border in an effort to reduce smuggling, including that of weapons and people. Controlling the crossing of food, in particular rice, was also mentioned by the federal authorities as an important reason for the decision, with the aim of reducing the import of substandard quality rice and enable local production to increase and cover domestic demand. But there have been clearly negative effects from all of that, including consumers struggling with price increases and entire regions seeing their economic base vanish as a result. Also unhappy is the Nigeria Employers Consultative Association, which stated in a note this week that the continuation of border closure is devastating legitimate local businesses, and blaming the plethora of problems along borders to, and I'm quoting here, poor custom border policing. Meanwhile, the instability in the country with regards to criminal activities such as kidnappings, as well as the insurgency plaguing Nigeria, are scaring investors away, according to Senate President Ahmed Lawan. Lawan has been looking for new ways to fund security outside the budget, with the aim of deploying more drones, creating new methods of tracking criminals, etc. Lawan stated, and this is sort of the closing statement for this podcast, he said, it will remain a pipe dream if we continue to ask investors to come to Nigeria. Even those in Nigeria will not invest properly if the security situation remains very dicey. End quote. And with this, thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.